Chapter 10. What is psychology for? As well as being an academic discipline, psychology has many practical uses. Academic psychologists are likely to specialize in one area of psychology and to carry out research to further the science of mental life. Their findings help us to understand, explain, predict, or modify what goes on in the mind as the control center for cognition, affect, and behavior, what we think, feel, and do. They may also develop theories and hypotheses to test and carry out original research in their applied settings, so that developments in the academic and professional fields can influence each other, with especially productive results when communication between them is good. For example, experimental laboratory-based work demonstrating that animals would complete quite complex tasks or series of tasks in order to gain a reward, together with research into the application of these methods in humans, stimulated the development of token economy programs. These work by rewarding behavior that you want to increase with tokens, which can later be exchanged for goodies or privileges. Such programs have been used successfully in the rehabilitation of offenders and in helping people become more independent after spending years in hospital. Alternatively, the observations of professional psychologists may stimulate academic interest. For example, psychologists working in hospitals noticed that some patients with auditory hallucinations seemed to have fewer hallucinations if they wore an earplug. This observation prompted valuable research into the relationship between hearing and auditory hallucinations. Where do professional psychologists work? Psychologists are likely to be interested in most aspects of human functioning, and in some of the ways in which animals function, too. Hence, there are many fields in which they work as applied or professional psychologists. Clinical or health psychologists work in healthcare settings, such as hospitals, clinics, doctor's offices, or in other community settings. Clinical psychologists mainly use psychological techniques to help people overcome difficulties and distress. Their postgraduate training enables them to provide therapy or advice, to evaluate psychological and other interventions, and to use their research skills to develop new ones, to teach and supervise others, and to contribute to the planning, development, and management of services generally. Health psychologists are more concerned with the psychological aspects of their patients' physical health and apply their knowledge to aid the treatment or prevention of illness and disability. For example, devising education programs about AIDS or diet, finding out how best to communicate with patients, or helping people to manage health-related problems such as post-operative recovery or living with a chronic illness such as diabetes. Professional psychologists also work outside healthcare settings. For example, forensic psychologists work with prison, probation, or police services and use their skills in helping to solve crimes, predict the behavior of offenders or suspects, and in rehabilitating offenders. Educational psychologists specialize in all aspects of schooling, such as looking at the determinants of learning and adjustment, or at solving educational problems. Environmental psychologists are interested in the interactions between people and their environment, and work in areas such as town planning, ergonomics, and designing housing so as to reduce crime. Sports psychologists try to help athletes maximize their performance and develop training schemes and ways of dealing with the stresses of competition. Many areas of business and commerce also use professional psychologists. Occupational psychologists consider all aspects of working life, including selection, training, staff morale, ergonomics, managerial issues, job satisfaction, motivation, and sick leave. Frequently, they are employed by companies to enhance the satisfaction and/or performance of employees. Consumer psychologists focus on marketing issues such as advertising, shopping behavior, market research, and the development of new products for changing markets. People who have learned about psychology at school or at university but who have not completed a professional training in the subject often find their knowledge of psychology useful in both their personal lives and their work. It is hardly surprising that there are many advantages in knowing something about how the mind works and in knowing how to determine whether intuitions or preconceptions about its workings, which are predominantly based on introspection, are justified. Both the findings of psychologists and the methods they use to discover things are potentially useful in a range of professional roles, such as teaching, social work, policing, nursing and medicine, research for TV or radio programs, political advising or analysis, journalism or writing, management and personnel, developing methods of communication and information technology, and also training or caring for animals, their health, or the environments they require for survival. The discipline of psychology teaches skills that are widely applicable, as well as providing training in thinking scientifically about mental life, about thoughts, feelings, and behavior. Uses and abuses of psychology. People frequently make assumptions about what psychologists are able to do. For example, that they can tell you what you are thinking from your body language or read your mind. While such assumptions are understandable, they are not correct. Psychologists can, as we have seen, study aspects of thinking, use rewards to change behavior, give advice to people who are distressed, and predict future behavior with some accuracy. Nevertheless, they cannot read people's minds or manipulate people against their will, and they have not yet drawn up a blueprint for happiness. Psychology can also be misused, as indeed can any other scientific body of information. Some of its misuses are relatively trivial, as in providing superficial answers to difficult questions, such as how to become a good parent. But some are not at all trivial. For example, treating people with certain political opinions as mentally ill. Psychologists have also been accused of such things as fostering psychobabble, or pseudoscientific jargon-ridden pronouncements and advice, and of developing poorly constructed schemes supposedly based on sound psychological principles. One critic of psychology, commenting on the recent increase in team building by means of adventure courses, said, "Psychologists, past masters at convening conferences in order to state the obvious, have at last turned their attention to this most bizarre manifestation of late 20th century corporate sadism." The researchers had discovered that those who do not shine on the raft-building front are likely to return to their offices with their confidence in shreds. Of course, the reason why such courses are on the increase may have more to do with financial benefits than with psychological decisions. The fact that psychology, like any other discipline, can be misunderstood and misused does not detract from its value. However, psychology is in a special position because it is a subject about which everyone has some inside information, and about which everyone can express an opinion based on personal information and subjective experience. An example may help to illustrate the point. Having spent many years researching various kinds of unhappiness, psychologists are now turning their attention to more positive emotions and have conducted surveys into the happiness of women in their marriages. A representative survey of American women reported that half of those married 5 years or more said that they were very happy or completely satisfied with their marriages, and 10% reported having had an affair during their current marriage. In contrast to this, Cher Height, in her report on Women and Love, claimed that 70% of women married 5 years or more were having affairs, and 95% of women felt emotionally harassed by the men they loved. Unlike the results of the first survey, these findings were widely reported in the media, and Cher Height herself placed great weight on the results because 4,500 women had responded to her survey. However, there are two major problems with her work. First, less than 5% of the people sampled responded, so we do not know the views of over 95% of them. And second, only women belonging to women's organizations were contacted in the first place. Thus, the respondents, the small percentage of women belonging to women's organizations who chose to respond to the survey, were not representative of the relevant population of women. This kind of reporting raises problems, as we know that people have a tendency to accept information that fits with their hunches or preconceptions, and that attention is easily grabbed by startling, novel, or alarming information. The point is that psychology is not being led by hunches, nor is it common sense. In order properly to understand psychological findings, people need to know something about how to evaluate the status and nature of the information they are given. Psychologists can and do contribute to debates such as that about marriages and their happiness, and they can help us to ask the kinds of questions that can be answered using scientific methods. Not, are marriages happy, but what do women who have been married 5 years or more report about the happiness of their marriages? The scientific, methodological nature of psychology therefore determines what psychology is for. Hence, the importance of developing appropriate methods of inquiry, reporting results in demonstrably objective ways, and also educating others about the discipline of psychology. Like any science, the nature of psychology has been and is being determined by the scientific methods and technology at its disposal. In the same way, the design of the bridges and buildings being built, and the speed with which information spreads between people far apart, are determined by technological developments. For instance, statistical and sophisticated computer programs help psychologists ensure that their surveys accurately reflect the facts. Surveys of large groups of people could tell us much about specific aspects of happiness, provided they were representative, carried out properly, interpreted with caution, and reported in an unbiased way. For a survey to be representative, all relevant groups of people, urban or rural, black or white, rich or poor, and so on, should have an equal chance of being selected, and the sample should pick up people in the same proportions as in the population from which the sample is drawn. Developments in computer technology help psychologists to carry out such random sampling procedures, and to check that their random sample is truly representative of the population. A sample of equal numbers of black and white people would be as unrepresentative in Zambia as it would in France. Statistical considerations are paramount, and these suggest, for example, that a random sampling of 1,500 people could provide a reasonably accurate estimate of the views of 100 million people, provided it were representative. Having 4,500 people in the survey does not make it more accurate than a sample of 1,500 people if the composition of the sample differs in important ways from that of the population about whom conclusions are drawn. Once again, psychology is in an especially difficult position because some aspects of its technology are generally available. Anyone can conduct a survey, not anyone can build a bridge. Knowing how to do it properly is equally important. What next? progress and complexity. 100 years ago, psychology as we know it today hardly existed. Great advances have been made in all aspects of the subject, and more can be expected. For example, we now know that, to a large extent, we construct our experience of the world and what happens in it. And we do not just use our faculties of perception, attention, learning, and memory to provide us with a passive reflection of external reality. Our mental life turns out to be far more active than was supposed by the early psychologists, who began by documenting its structures and functions. And it has been shaped over the millennia by evolutionary forces of adaptation to be this way. Psychologists have enabled us to understand the basics about how mental processes work, and some of the basics about why they work in the way that they do. But as well as providing answers, their findings continue to raise questions. If memory is an activity, not a repository, then how do we understand its dynamics? Why do intelligent beings use so many illogical ways of thinking and reasoning? Can we simulate these to create artificially intelligent machines that do not just process prodigious quantities of information in record time, but also help us to understand other, more human aspects of mental life? How can we understand the processes involved in creative or nonverbal thinking and communication? What is the precise nature of the relationships between language and thought, and between thoughts and feelings? How do people change their minds or modify outdated or unhelpful patterns of thinking? We know that answers to these questions, and many more like them, will be complex, as so many factors influence psychological aspects of functioning. But as increasingly powerful techniques of research and analysis are being developed, and as relevant variables are sorted from irrelevant ones, answers become increasingly likely. A surprising amount of psychologists' work has been stimulated by the social and political problems of the 20th century. For example, strides were made in the understanding and measurement of intelligence and personality during the Second World War, when the armed forces needed better means of recruitment and selection. The behavior of people in wartime provoked Milgram's famous studies on obedience. Social deprivation in large cities provided the context for the Head Start project, from which we have learned about compensating for environmental disadvantages in early childhood. Developing business as well as political cultures provide the context for studies of leadership, teamworking, and goal setting. Obvious social problems have produced an urgent need to understand more about prejudice and about how to deal with the stresses and strains of modern life. It is likely that the developments of psychology in the next century will continue to be influenced by the social and environmental problems we face. At present, psychologists are still working to understand more about the effects of traumatic experiences on memory and on the determinants of different types of forgetting and recovering memories. And in areas like this one, partial answers are more common than complete ones. The product of research is often to refine the questions that guide future hypotheses. Today, psychology is a far more diverse subject than it was even 50 years ago, as well as a more scientific one. Its complexity means that it may never develop as a science with a single paradigm, but will continue to provide an understanding of mental life from many different perspectives. Cognitive and behavioral, psychophysiological, biological, and social. Like any other discipline, it is the site of conflicting theories as well as agreement, which makes it an exciting discipline within which to work. For example, the more experimental and the more humanistic branches of psychology separated long ago, and have largely developed separately. Perhaps one of the more exciting challenges for psychologists today is in bringing together the products of some of its different specializations. This kind of endeavor has contributed to the development of cognitive science, in which scientists from many different fields, not just psychology, are now working together to further our understanding of mental functions, of brain and behavior. Psychologists have always been interested in the biological basis of human life and behavior, and are now contributing to a developing understanding of how genes and the environment, nature and nurture, interact. Similarly, close collaboration between research psychologists and their clinical colleagues opens up exciting possibilities. To mention just two of these, advances in the scientific understanding of the developing relationship between an infant and its caregiver could potentially clarify how attachment patterns may set a person on a certain measurable pathway, which makes subsequent psychopathology more or less likely. Early claims that were once not testable are becoming so as different branches of psychology come together and the people working in them learn from each other. Second, theoretical models which illuminate the relationships between four main aspects of human functioning, thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations, and behavior, are being constructed, taking into account the observations made in the clinic. These complex models have implications not just for understanding mental processes and the determinants of present behavior, but also for explaining the influence of past experiences and for improved treatments for psychological problems. Undoubtedly, future research will raise as many questions as it answers, and equally certainly, psychology will continue to fascinate people, those who know about it only from their own subjective experience, as well as those who make it their life's work.
This concludes Psychology, A Very Short Introduction by Jillian Butler and Frieda McManus, narrated by Tamara Marston. Copyright 2014 by Jillian Butler and Frieda McManus. Production copyright by Audible. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Oxford University Press and was produced in the year 2021 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.